A video can possibly stop a war.
A military chopper opens fire. Instruments of genocide. WikiLeaks unmask the lies of orders cued by central command. Gunsight video nails the murder scene. It's getting late in the hour. Don't wait another minute to speak truth to power. Victims of smart bombs went up in flames.
It up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Here at KBOO on February 20th, we'll be celebrating National Love Your Pet Day. Feel free to record a 1 to 2 minute audio or as long as a 10 minute audio explaining your relationship with your animal family. Share experiences as well as value of relationship and any other interesting or powerful story. The animals in our life bring us incomparable companionship. Whether a cat, dog, parrot, horse, or any other beloved pet, humans have developed incredible bonds with their animal counterparts. We want to hear your experiences with your pets and most importantly, how much you love them and how they have made your life better. Send your audio to publicaffairs@kboo.org with the subject line Pet Day. You can also call the station at 503-231-8032 and choose voice mailbox 302 and go ahead and record your story.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam and you're listening to KBOO.
Hello and welcome to For the Wild podcast. I'm Ayana Young. Today, we are speaking with Josue Rivas.
Like, when we talk about a creator or the or creation or creatives, what I think, you know, a lot of people use that in social media, right? Like, I'm a content creator. I think that it comes back to, like, are we really understanding what the word means? Like, if we, you know, if you are a creator or that creator is inside of you, or that, you know, creation or creative, you know, energies inside of you, then you wouldn't give that away so easily.
Josue Rivas is an indigenous futurist, creative director, visual storyteller, and educator, working at the intersection of art, technology, journalism, and decolonization. His work aims to challenge the mainstream narrative about indigenous peoples, co-create with the community, and serve as a vehicle for collective healing. He is a 2020 Catch Light Leadership Fellow, Magnum Foundation Photography and Social Justice Fellow, founder of Indigenea, co-founder of Indigenous Photograph, and curator at Indigenous TikTok. Oh, Josue, this is so lovely and warming to be talking to you after so many years. I still remember the times we shared together at Standing Rock and beyond. And yeah, it's really been wonderful to watch you and your work soar through the world. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Ayana. And yeah, it's great to reconnect and share story and, you know, just be present. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being present is the best gift. So I'm with you there. Gosh, there's so much to ask you. I've really, really appreciated following your work and both your photography and your words over the years. And I want to open by thinking about the practice of art, of photography, as a distantly creative act. And I just want to hear more about your relationship to the form and perhaps think through some of the words you use when describing your photography practice.
Yes, definitely. I think we're in a very important time to tell stories, especially the stories that are our own. So when I look at the, you know, as photography and visual storytelling, you know, as a medium, as a tool, almost like a tool for channeling, right? It's like, how do we tell us stories and share stories that are going to live beyond us, and things that are going to be hopefully not only remembered but listened to. I think that so much of the process of making images is knowing that your perspective and that, you know, that angle that you photograph or that you make or that you show up to a movement, that's going to be complex and it's also going to be meaningful beyond yourself. And I think that the camera and photography and now as we're looking into like social media and different forms of storytelling like TikTok, like how do we maintain a intention and then also an understanding and awareness of what that image does to our consciousness and to, most importantly, to our subconscious, I think. And how does that perpetuate trauma in ourselves? How does that perpetuate, you know, harm? But also, how can we also use the same thing that is used often against us, which is the image, in order to heal ourselves, or in order to transform ourselves, or in order to transcend into a place of peace and rest, you know? Like, yeah, I think that the image is it's a powerful medium at this time in our history. I don't know if I answered the question, but that's what yeah. I was feeling.
No, it's good. It's a good opener. I'm thinking back to a conversation with Atmos magazine, and you're saying to them is, through that process, I learned that what we've been told about photography and the image making process is deeply colonizing. It involves a language of capturing or shooting or taking and refers to people as subjects. It's the same colonial language people use to describe their treatment of indigenous peoples and other folks from around the world. What I've tried to do is shed that energy, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a conversation. So I'm just like, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I just want to like sit with that with you and explore the language of photography and how that manifests in the way that this medium has been used for, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm. You know, during Standing Rock and during that time, it was a pivotal moment for for my own practice, right? Like my own awareness of how am I using this tool? How am I using this? I mean, it really is, I think, a necessity for humans to tell a story. I really think that we are constantly like digesting the stories that are told to us, but we hardly ever look within to like share our own story. And I remember at Standing Rock, you know, after Standing Rock and, you know, going through this journey of like understanding coherently what I wanted to do with this, I had to go back to like my childhood, and I had to go back to my father being a photographer who, you know, was also an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Like we were like, I was battling this, you know, the camera in my own life had an abusive tone to it. Like when I thought about cameras, or I thought about how people were making images, or, you know, taking, you know how people say, like, I was like, yeah, the camera is related to my own father, but also like universally, it's that relationship with the patriarchy, you know? It's like, you know, you look at all the Pulitzer Prize winners for the last, like, you know, 40 years, the majority are not women or people of color, or, you know, folks that are, you know, LGBTQ plus. Like it's primarily being told from this place of like a more, you know, standard, you know, paradigm, let's call it that for now. But I think that for me, it was like, how do I we have to transform that. Like we have to transform the, not only the language, but the way that we use these images. So for me, I had to like forgive my father, you know, and be like, hey, I forgive you for, you know, for being the father that you were, but also for giving, you know, I'm thanking you for giving you the gift of photography. And after Standing Rock, I went through that journey of me being a father, me seeing how that image, that I know was, I was, the images that we were making at Standing Rock, like, you know, I knew they were going to be for a long time, but how does that relate to my son? You know, like, how does that relate to my family? How does that relate to my community? And I had to go through this moment of transformation that I think allowed me to look inward and realize that we've been using the camera as a tool for extraction. And through that journey of like creating these spaces for Indigenous people to tell their own story, which is a project that we did in 2017 called Sending Strong, I was able to realize that I had to like dig into my own story. And in that journey, I found the language, right? Like I started thinking about how, like, when I'm making something, like photography wise, I feel like I'm making something with something bigger than myself. Like it's not about Josue, or it's not about like our creative team. It's like, how do we center something bigger than ourselves in the process of making? And in that process, then you realize that you don't want to extract from people, that maybe they're not your subjects. Maybe they're sovereign beings that deserve the same treatment that, for example, a celebrity would get, right? Like you start realizing all these things that you're like, wait, hold on. Like we have standards for the way that we treat people with a camera differently. And they all come back to extraction. And it's almost like extraction, and also this sense of like that relationship with their father, you know? And I know that sounds weird, but it's like, it's true. Like the camera has been in a patriarchal paradigm, and we need to like return to like a matriarchal paradigm that it's like co-created, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking about the program you did with Indigenous storytellers and creating distinctly Indigenous photographs, and how there was an interview you did with Dazed Digital, and you were saying when you work with Indigenous people, you have a different set of rules as a journalist, because historically a lot of these communities have been documented and portrayed in a certain way, everything from National Geographic to the pipeline opposition, end quote. So I'd love to hear you talk about what your protocols are, and even what the editing process is for you when you shift between different, you know, modes of, you know, location and what you're there to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that quote is interesting, because I think that it's this really deep understanding that I'm constantly a guest in the places that I am at, you know, and that I am, where I'm located to make something, that I'm a guest there, not only if it's a territorial thing, you know, like different territories for different communities, but that when you say yes to telling a story for someone else or with someone else, that the portal for co-creation and collaboration opens up. And in that portal, like, things will manifest differently than what maybe you're used to, or maybe what other people are used to. And that intention of co-creating, it's really important in my creative practice and in the way that we do things here at Indígena. Because if we know who we're making for, so we have to ask ourselves the question, like, you know, who are you making this for? And why are you making this? And a lot of times when we are asked to tell a story or to, you know, co-create with a community, you know, we have, like, sometimes that you know, that doesn't lock in, right? Like, certain things don't lock in, and that's where we have to push and almost kind of like educate people sometimes and be like, hey, you know, we can't use that person's story and just, you know, share it widely without reciprocating with that community or with those peoples. And a lot of the times, where we find ourselves is like almost like making new paths of how do we reciprocate, how do we co-create, how do we make sure that we do this in every community that we go to or in every story? Because having protocols are only useful if you actually use them and you put them to practice, and they're constantly evolving too. There's, you know, we just did a project with the city of Portland here where we would paste the faces of indigenous folks that we co-created with all around the city. And there were some people that were like, hey, like, you know, when we put up my photo, can I be there and can I put it up myself? And we're like, yes, of course, like, that's great. And then that was a new learning, right? So it's almost like you're constantly learning that certain communities want things a certain way, and that you have to be flexible with the ways that you make. And then also that's actually informed the way that we're making in the future, which I think is collaboration. I really believe that very soon we're gonna realize that, for example, TikTok or Instagram or all these different tech companies that are constantly using our own image, like, literally that's like our energy. They're using it without us being able to have that, you know, that conversation with ourselves, like, who am I doing this for and why am I doing this? Like, every time that I post something on Instagram, I literally ask myself those questions, and then I have a very clear intention, and then I let it go because I know that it's out of my control. But I think that having that awareness, it's another thing that, you know, when it comes to our protocols, it's important to have, is knowing that we can still make things that are, you know, that are hard to swallow sometimes, you know, or like, you know, partnering up with a brand, like, hey, how do you do that? And can you still do it in a way that fits our protocols? And a lot of the times, to be honest, it doesn't. Like, it's not in the DNA of commerce and capitalism to reciprocate with community. You know, it's like, it's quite the opposite. So sometimes we have to step away from projects or say, hey, thank you so much for thinking of us, but, you know, if we cannot meet these basic standards, like, we, you know, we won't be able to co-create with you. So those are some of the protocols.
Yeah, it's interesting. Gosh, there's so many pieces to this, but thinking about social media when you brought that up, and there's a few things to explore here, but one, what you're saying, or I think what you're saying about these multi-billion-dollar tech companies taking our energy, taking our creations, and in, I guess, a way, owning them even, because once we put those images on their apps or websites, we kind of give away our power to them, and they can be used against us. They can be used to sell us things, to find out information, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not always an everyday process for us to think through what we're really doing when we're posting images. But it's also challenging because, of course, that's kind of become the modus operandi of connection, especially when you don't live near family or friends, or when you're trying to build up your brand as a creative because you want to support yourself with something that you're passionate about, you know, so it's like mm-hmm. really complicated. And I'd love to hear how you wrestle with that, or what are some of the challenges that you face when you're wanting to use these platforms for mm-hmm. yourself for good, but knowing that there's kind of sinister underpinnings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a I think it comes down to the energy that is spent on you know, on having a social media presence or having an internet-based presence for, you know, for a business or for even like people that are trying to, you know, make ends meet, right? Like there's people that is their job. Like I met people who they're like, oh yeah, my whole job is I'm a TikToker. And I'm like is that real? And it's like, oh yeah, it is. Like literally their whole day schedule is around building this business and this character that is on TikTok and that is like sharing, you know, different things, right? I think it comes back to this idea of the creator, and I know I can speak on this you know, in your podcast, because it's I think the audience is going to understand this a little more. But like when we talk about the creator or the or creation or creatives, what I think, you know, a lot of people use that in social media, right? Like I'm a content creator. I think that it comes back to like, are we really understanding what the word means? Like if you are a creator, or that creator is inside of you, or that, you know, or creation or creatives, you know, energies inside of you, then you wouldn't give that away so easily. Like if we really understood that whatever energy is coming through us in order to be alive and, you know, be coherent and, you know, have a personality and all these different traits that like make up this reality, like if that is inside of us, then why are we giving it away so quickly? And why are we giving it away in a way that is basically being sold back to us? Like, so with you know, there's that extreme of how I see that. And there's also, like, for example, Indigenous TikTok, which is this page that I've been curating for like a year and a half. Like during the pandemic, I just started like asking other people if I can share their TikToks. And then we created this page, Indigenous TikTok. Then you look at that. And honestly, like that's been I learned so much about how people operate on social media based on this page, because what you realize very quickly is that a post, especially now that are reels, right? Like a post will do so well if there's conflict. Like the engagement will go up so much more if there's conflict. And it has to come from someone, especially like a lot of times it's like, you know, someone just like making a racist comment and then being like, from there, the whole, like people start fighting. I kind of picture it like all these people are fighting in this like circle in the middle of town, and everyone's like it's getting bigger because there's a group of people. And then you look at the other type of, you know, stuff that is put up, and we looked at that through Indigenous TikTok of, you know, things that are more, that are really centered on peace, right? They're like more peaceful, it's not about like right or wrong or, you know, shaming others. Like, I you know, a lot of times, like, you know, when there's like that, like, you know, people talking about other cultures and being like, but those people are like, usually TikTok wants you to do that, and Reels, they want you to do that. They want you to create conflict right away in your post. And it's literally on their guidelines, right? It's like, if you want more engagement, like these are the tricks, you know? And it's also like, what we learned is that if there's positive messages or there's, you know, if there's no conflict involved, then the post won't do as well. So for me, what I realized then, it was like, it's knowing that these things are not gonna be there forever. Like, it doesn't matter how many followers you have, it doesn't matter how many, you know, how much money you make from like posting TikToks and Reels. Like, it comes down to the fact that that is another channel, just like the camera, right? It's another channel, and it's being used for extraction. And at the bottom line, is not gonna put us into the future that we can co-create together for us to be able to belong on Earth in a good way. Like, so when these things are gone, where did that conflict go? You know, like when a post, it's like 1,000 comments because people are fighting over like something that someone said or something that someone misread. Like I see so many times where like people comment something and then someone takes it the wrong way, but they're actually in the same page, and then go off for like 50 comments on fighting and then come to realize that they're actually wearing the same page. And then you're like, wait, hold on, this is not real life. But why are we treating it like it is? And it has to do with the fact that we are being extracted from, that our spirit is being sucked out every time we post something. And if you're aware of it, like sometimes I think about this, like, man, I'm not about to post this, but one, like, you know, someone's gonna misrepresent this or like misinterpret it, or, you know, is this gonna create conflict? Like I stopped sharing stuff that is like extreme anymore, like from both sides. I just started like using social media as, this is a great way for people to hear a tiny bit, like a glimpse of who I really am. And then I also know that I'm actually interested in it. Like I actually love to throw like glitches at it and like throw like little, like I like to throw a glitch in the matrix a little bit with social media. But anyways, I don't know the answer to the questions, but I think it just comes back to that idea. It's like, it's not about the tool, it's how we use it. And imagine if everyone got off of social media for a day. How much money would that lose for like Instagram or TikTok? Like that would be millions of dollars if we just don't engage. Like if you're just like, I'm not gonna engage and I'm just gonna step away from this. But we won't do it because we're still enamored with the idea of social media.
I just had this vision, and maybe I'd seen it in a movie or something, but it's like all of us humans are going around with this kind of like zombie brainwash connected to the computer or something, and then all of a sudden it disappears, and then we're like standing on the earth not really knowing where we are or who we are or what we do next. But there will be something else. Like, I think sometimes when we get wrapped up in these addictive habits, it can feel like, well, what would we do without Instagram? Like, we'd be bored. What would we do if we didn't have these outlets for connection? And I think what we'd learn is that there's so much more connection to be had that's probably more meaningful, more impactful, more effective for what we or how we want to be with the earth and with each other. But yeah, I like how you said enamored. I think that's a really good word too. And I see that for us. And it really just makes me think more about extraction. And it's hard because, you know, a lot of us aren't extracting in the sense of fossil fuel extraction for our income. But like we've talked about, photography can be extractive. Honestly, every single way to make money can be extractive, and in a sense has an extractive foundation to it, because that's how our financial capitalist system is set up. And so I think it's really fascinating the work that you've been doing with bigger brands. And it's a tricky subject, and that's why I want to hear you talk about it, because I think it's important for us to understand how we, well, how do I say this? Because like there's like this binary where it's like, this is good, this is bad. And it's really easy for us to judge things, especially with social media. It's really easy to create conflict out of everything, even though we're all implicated in it together. But I think maybe our brains just want to be able to categorize something. But of course, things are more complex. Our lives are more multidimensional. So I know I'm like going in a roundabout with this question, but I guess when I think about creatives and large brands and how it's not a perfect relationship, but it's not to say there's not something worthy in those partnerships. And so I just want to explore how you've been able to navigate the terrain as an Indigenous artist, photographer, working with corporations, and where you see the trouble in that, where you see the growth in that, and what your experiences have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that. You know, maybe that's a really good question, to be honest. Like, I think we need to talk about this more in spaces that are, that sometimes we can get really extreme about our views, you know, like on all sides, you know. And I think that what I'm learning more and more is that there is people in these corporations. Like, there's actually, like, that's one thing that it was hard for me to understand at first, you know, like, especially after Standing Rock, like, how do you go from like doing that work and then going into like a personal practice with a lot of like personal stories to like, you know, sitting in a room with like 20 different executives from a really big corporation and them telling you that your work kind of sucks. Like, how do you like manage all that and still like do the work? And I think that we have to stop being afraid of talking about spirit in creativity. And what I mean by that is that we again, the whole thing with the creator or the creation or creatives, you know, is within us. Like, if we have that at the center of our practice, whatever our practice is, whether it is making a great podcast or, you know, making an image or directing a music video, making a commercial, which is, you know, again, it's like, it's, you know, most people will be like, oh my God, you know, there's a corporate entities. And it's like, yeah, but how do we show up with that creation within ourselves and let that be the driver and let that be the guide, even when you have to deal with a corporation? And I think that's what I'm still learning, to be honest. But so far, there's been, you know, opportunities that we literally they just don't align. And when we find those opportunities that don't align, we like to learn why. You know, it's like, oh, so we didn't do that, or they say no to this because we actually said the truth, or we actually stated things that were, you know, that were challenging, you know, the structure or the intention of a corporation. And I think that's totally okay. And I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with not being invited to another, you know, next, you know, diversity thing at this like corporation. Like, I'm okay with that because I'm not making it for them. Whenever I go and make stuff with brands, we're making that for the community. Like, that's who we want to make sure that feels good about the things that we're doing. And that's really hard too, because community is a completely different thing, right? You're dealing with a corporation, then you're dealing with community, which is also complex. It's not like easy. It's not like, you know, perfect, you know, all the time. So if we can focus on our guide towards the community, then the community informs you, you know, of what they like and what they want. Right now, obviously, there's a lot of emphasis on, you know, Indigenous stories from North America, but, you know, as we grow, like, I want people to just reach out to me because they want to tell human stories. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, but it will be the same thing. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, can you meet these basic things which are centered around the community and coming back to the community? Because you're going to use that to go sell your shoe or sell your t-shirt. But you have to actually reciprocate with the community in a way that makes sense for them. Not that makes sense for you, but like, you know, like, I remember seeing this photographer who is really famous photographer who photographs like Indigenous tribes around the world. And we were on a panel together and I asked him the question. I was like, hey, like, so, you know, how do you pay back these folks? Like, you're selling these books for like $900, you know, that are like, has the faces and the people in it. And he's like, well, they don't really accept money. They don't care about money, you know? So I'll bring them gifts. And I was like, yeah, but are you sure they don't accept money? Like, it's kind of questioning a little bit. And then I realized that it's what works for the it's like that history is never told from the perspective of the oppressed. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, how do we make sure that these corporations are telling stories and honoring the communities that they want to work with, and also like not be reactionary. And this comes back to the whole thing about language, and this comes back to the whole thing about why do we send people to war to photograph and not send them to make like work about peace, you know? It's like we have a war photographer at war, but we don't have a peace photographer at war. Like, it just comes back to that idea that conflict, it's what feeds the algorithm and it's what feeds the corporation, you know? There has to be an Adidas to a Nike, like, because it's conflict and it's gonna make all of them more money. And it's like, I remember showing up, I mean, I don't know if somebody will hear this from Adidas or Nike, but I remember showing up to like a Nike thing, like, wearing Adidas, and I was like, what is a big deal? You know, this is my shoe, like that's what I'm wearing today. And then I realized, oh, it is a big deal to them because all they care about is how they're perceived. So they can keep selling stuff. No shade on any of them, but I just think it's kind of silly, you know? And like sometimes we'll say things, not say things like that, but like we'll show up to places and the community will have very specific needs or a request that might seem like out of, like they might seem weird to like a brand. And then we're like, well, to you that's weird, but to the community, that's actually what they need, you know? And that's what this is a specific community. And then the whole thing about reaction and being proactive is that in 2020, I have a friend who works for, who has a consultancy, you know, agency that consults brands about like diversity and race and all these different things. And he's, you know, he's African-American. And he was like, hey, we're talking about like his growth and stuff like the growth went like 300% growth during the George Floyd thing, you know? And it was like, he was really disappointed because he was like, I've been knocking on these doors for like years. And like, not until someone dies, like, will they care about, you know, putting their black square. And that's another thing that I think is huge with our work and my personal practice is that I don't want to wait until there's a tragedy happening to indigenous peoples for us to tell indigenous stories. Like we have to be so much more proactive. And I think that's what we're trying to do. So that even though the Instagram will be there, TikTok will be there, these big corporations will be there, we're a step ahead. We're into the future, you know? Like I'm a futurist at heart. Like I want to like plant seeds for like trees that I won't get to, you know, to sit on, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's a big part of us, you know, challenging these corporations, but then also not being afraid to get in there and be like, oh, that's interesting that you have these ideas. There's like not a lot of percentage of people that will give you different ideas. I see why. Okay. So maybe you need to probably bring different voices here, you know, like that still happens in corporations. Like where like there's not one person from that thing that they're talking about. And you're like, wait, like nobody thought about the fact that like, you're all talking about like, you know, a story centered around women. There's no women in the room. Like, you know, and like, so we have to be way ahead and we have to be clear about our agreements. And sometimes it doesn't work out and that's totally okay. Like there's, you know, there will always be a Native American Heritage Month every year. And then people will be waiting to make their content, you know, from their content creators. It's like, it's just really interesting to me. We just react instead of being like, how can we build and how can we vision together?
Mm-hmm. It's tricky because working with these corporations can be problematic in the sense that there's a real miss in value alignment. And at the same mm-hmm. time, they reach so many people. And if we are trying to shift culture, it seems like we need to take every angle possible because, mm-hmm. you know, the sad fact is these corporations really impact people on so many levels, but like the psyche. And you think about kids growing up and how children are conditioned and their belief systems are formed based off corporate ads. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's like if we don't get in there, we're missing out on a huge opportunity to potentially shift culture or at least move something forward, like what you were saying with representation, to create stories or to create, like conditioning to buy something for a group of people, but those people aren't represented. It's like it just keeps perpetuating a type of control that I know a lot of us are trying to break. And this kind of leads me to this question of what comes after decolonization. And mm-hmm. I really am wondering, like, how do we make decolonization a rooted and tangible process rather than an ephemeral ideal that's omnipresent but only ever treated as a metaphor?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to just riff with you on that for a bit.
Yeah. Man, decolonization. Do you remember the first time you heard the word?
Oh gosh.
I'm trying to think about mine, but like the first time you heard like the word like decolonization and where you heard it from? Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact moment, but I remember a type of excitement probably.
Mm-hmm. Because like to me, I always think about that. It's like, you know, I think it was like 17-ish. And I was working to help undocumented students in Orange County tell the story about DACA and the Dream Act. I don't know if you remember that. It's like trying to give a path to citizenship to youth that came here with their parents as young kids. And I remember people were talking about that, right? And they were like, you know, they colonized. And then growing up in a, you know, like a Mexican, you know, community and a lot of indigenous, it's like rooted in indigeneity, you know, it's a lot of the ways that we live and all that. But then also like, I was like, what does decolonization mean when it comes to the church? You know, like, it's like, how did you decolonize from Catholicism? And so I started kind of going into that path. And I remember very clearly when I realized that decolonization, it starts with you. That is not an external thing, but rather it's part of that darkness and that shadow of ourselves. And it's almost like I used to be afraid of being colonized. Like I used to be afraid of like having colonizing thoughts or colonizing like habits, you know, like especially growing up like Catholic, especially growing up like, you know, very, like it's just like a very macho culture, you know, like it was like, and I remember thinking that part of our culture, that part of ourselves and that part of myself had to be, instead of fearing it, I had to be curious about it. And I think that's the moment where I really understood the word or the meaning behind the word or the idea. It was my the way that I live this life is going to affect people in the future and people in the present as well. And it also can transform energy from the past, that I am past, present, and future all in one. And that decolonization, it's part of that. That is part of the complexity of myself, and also the complexity of a community, or the complexity of like a relationship with a corporation. You know, like it's not just like, it doesn't have to be this or this. It can be this and this. And I think that's when I realized a lot of these thoughts about the collective act of decolonizing, especially through storytelling. And I think there's a future, I'm telling you, like we're gonna realize one day, like, yo, like I feel so drained by Instagram or TikTok or this next thing that I need to do because everyone else is doing it. And we're gonna return, at least the ones that, you know, that are gonna take that path, but we're gonna return to like hugging a tree or like listening to the ocean. You know, it's like, I know this sounds like out there, but I think people, and this is just my own belief and my own hope, you know, is that people realize that they don't need an external medium in order to be okay with themselves, and to like, decolonizing is that, it's like being okay with who you are and also taking action to be curious and like plant those seeds for the future, you know? It's like, how do you do that? Knowing that you're not even gonna be there. Like, knowing that the way that I approach my son's like, you know, disappointment about soccer, like that's gonna affect like his great grandkids, because my son's gonna like remember my reaction. or when we go make a, you know, tell a story, and the way that you make people feel when you make their imaging, you know, you create something beautiful, that that's gonna like ripple into the fact that they're gonna feel great about themselves and maybe a little transform, and then from there, they're gonna affect their community. You know, it's like, it's all about having that self-awareness and being okay with being in the process of doing things, not being like, you know, I'm already decolonized, because I don't think anyone really is, you know, like even, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's a question for you. Like, do you think like there is such thing as like being fully decolonized and just like perfect, or do you think that like, it's almost like a journey that you have to do your whole life?
I would say the latter. I think it is a process. I mean, not to equate it to enlightenment, but I don't think it's something that we can just grab and hold stagnant and think that we've done it. And I think that's part of the pressure of it, is that at least in the Western reductionist mind, we've really been taught to think that if we follow a certain protocol, then we'll have achieved whatever it is that we're going for. And if we just follow these rules, then therefore we get to the top of something. And in a sense, like, that is an antithesis of being present, or like even the idea of being present and decolonization, which I think they're connected. It's something to tap into every single day. And I think that, you know, especially with decolonization, if we try to put these ideals of perfection and purity on that, not only are we missing the point, but I think we're really setting people up to fail, because we live within the system that makes it nearly impossible. So in a sense, like, anything we're doing to reconnect and to be aware should be celebrated, and not told like it's not enough, as much as I wish we could do a hell of a lot more. Like, I really do. I really wish we could be faster and more effective in our healing. But, you know, I just don't see us being able to heal in such like firm walled spaces, or like, I don't see that as, I don't witness that in myself or others as the way we heal or the way we become whole. So I don't know if that answers the question. Maybe that was a little too tangential, but yeah.
No, I mean, it touches on a lot of good points about like the journey being educational, and almost like you learn from the feedback and from the you know, the challenges that you know, that arise in your decolonization process, and also like they become opportunities, right, of transformation. Because it really comes down to, like, you know, we were talking about earlier, but like the camera, I believe, is like a transformational tool. like I really think that, like, when you see yourself, like when I see myself in photos, I can either feel really bad about myself and like mean to myself, or I can be like, oh, like, you know, that looks, you know, that looks like me. Like the camera is that reflection and the opportunity to reflect, and also, in my opinion, like transform, which I think decolonization is transformation. You know, it's like in the transformation process can take a long time. So if you make an image and you have an image of that moment, of that person, of that space, then that can remind us, because I think it's about remembering too, like who we are, like we're these like beautiful beings that are like on this tiny little rock going through space, like they get to have like podcasts and you know lattes and stuff like that, and you know, get to go and hug a tree, like we're not, I think we forget often how powerful we really are as storytellers, as creators, you know. That's why that word bothers me so much when they use it on TikTok. It's like if you only understood what that meant, it's like you would not feed it in the way that you feed it. Like, you will be more protective about your energy, you know. But I did think that like the camera, it's a great tool. And then, I mean, we can get into like AR and VR, but like, you know, that's just an extension of, yeah, it's an extension of the attempt to try to make us make sense of ourselves and remember, but it's, in my opinion, it's corrupted. Like a lot of the times these technologies can be useful for certain things, but it can also, like, you know, they're in the hands of corporations. I think that they get misused to create a crooked, not even crooked, but let me find the right word. It's like not the reality of who we really are, you know, that we're powerful. And now sometimes when I go on social media, I just feel like after, like, you know, scrolling or whatever, like, I feel like, man, like, I feel like my power was just taken away from me. I need to recover that, you know? And so that's why lately I've just been kind of like, I've just been like using it as a tool to like share a little bit of the process and, you know, the things are happening. But I guess I'm like decolonizing slash transforming my relationship with social media, you know, and my relationship with technology. Like, and I think we're gonna have to. That's the messed up part, is that one day we're gonna have to. There's gonna be no choice. It's gonna be like, you either choose to not engage with this in the way that you've been engaging, which I think for a lot of people is gonna be too late. And you can also, you know, choose to like just go away from it. And yeah, just like, what if, you know, what are the teachings of the trees? You know, what are the teachings of the plant? What are the teachings of the animals that are actually right there? Like, you don't need that, you know, there's no, you don't see an ego and they're like, oh my God, I go and I go check out their profile. Like, you know, make sure that their status is, you know, and I can check out their status. Like that's not how nature works. So social media and technology are a natural attempts to make us have a sense of self.
Thinking about your work with sanctuary cities and gentrification, and in your Yes magazine piece you write, documenting this sanctuary city also represented a return to places that I knew in my youth, end quote. So I'd just love to hear more about your journey and the process of documenting what that was for you, and mm-hmm. just more about your role as photographer and yeah, what brought you here, led you to this mm-hmm. work?
Yeah, so like I shared earlier, like my dad was a photographer, my mom was also a photographer. So I grew up kind of seeing a lot of these, like almost like interactions, because my mom and my dad used to do a lot of like weddings and like baptisms. We live in Mexico, in Guanajuato, Mexico. And so I grew up seeing a lot of that, and also like just the dynamic of my mom and my dad, and how my dad was always giving away the photos that he was supposed to be selling. Like he was notorious for that. Like, because people didn't have enough money, or, you know, somebody was like, hey, give me like 2 for 1, you know, like he'll just do it. So that would like create a like conflict between my mom and my dad. And I remember though also having a teaching where as I got older, I realized that everywhere we went, we will be fed every single time. Like, we will go to different, like, you know, pueblos around our area, and everybody knew my dad because he had, you know, at some point probably given them like free photographs. So now in retrospect, you know, it's like, I think getting older, when I first came to the United States when I was 11, you know, I was battling a lot of that, right? Like this relationship with photography, this relationship with, you know, migrating to a place that was culturally and energetically, like very different, but also very, it was like America was defined in my mind, like, oh, America is this, you know, the United States is this, you know, in Spanish we say el norte, you know, like the north is like this, you know? And then realizing as I got older, when like my early 20s, the power of plant medicine to help me find my place in this place and help me transform my wounds from the relationship with my father and transform the wounds of my relationship with the camera. You know, it was, I was a young man, you know, just, you know, early 20s, transforming and then realizing that transformation is healing, that in that process of me accepting that my father calls me for the first time in like 10 years. And he's like, hey, you know, I miss you. Like, I want to apologize for, you know, for growing up, like, you know, in the way that you did. Unfortunately, when I was young, you know, 7 to 11, I was houseless. So I live on the streets in Mexico. And yeah, like, I think he just felt, you know, that energy from that ceremony that he like apologized. And then he said, I'm going to send you my camera. Like, I literally have it right behind me right now. Like, it's my dad's camera. And he's like, I'm going to send you this camera without him knowing anything. Like, you know, so I don't say that the camera, that I picked up the camera, I think that the camera picked me up, you know, because now this thing that I was using, and I realized later on that wherever I put my lens, like, that thing would amplify. And, you know, like, learning on, like, what do I want to amplify? You know, like, how do I want to use this gift, this medicine that was given to me through my father, through that lineage of storytellers, to use it for learning and transformation. And then I realized that as I was telling my story more, especially after Standing Rock, you know, I was like exploring my own self, my own narratives that I had within myself and my complexities. Then I started seeing, like, oh, if you just set it up for other people to do that on their own, like, if you can give a camera to young people and tell them, hey, you tell me what's important to you. Like, all of a sudden you start expanding and almost like opening this portal for people to transform themselves. Like, it's as simple as that. It's like, when we have the opportunity to tell a story with intention and not just like take a selfie or like do like a really random dance on like a, you know, at Walmart, like, when we actually are intentional about it and we're like using it, then that thing amplifies us and amplifies our ancestors and the future generations, those people we'll never meet. So through this journey, I ended up in Orange County, you know, when I was 21. And I think that, you know, going back to Orange County in California and Santa Ana, which was a city that, you know, I grew up in, it was part of that transformational energy, that healing energy, to see it differently, because I think that, you know, knowing that I'm not from here, meaning that I'm not from here based on the, you know, the lens of an American lens, you know, like a colonized lens, you know, to that degree, you know what I mean? But that my peoples and all of our peoples throughout this continent have been engaging and sharing with each other since time immemorial, that, you know, the Turtle Island is really, you know, Anahuac, which is like our, what we call Turtle Island. It's like that I am from here, you know, and that I'm meant to tell these stories, and that I'm meant to connect with these relatives, and that I am meant to learn and like share my gift, which is, you know, happens to be like storytelling, especially with visuals, and to co-create with people. And now I'm at a space where, you know, I know that I just know that there's a generation of storytellers, especially with indigenous storytellers, that is coming up, that is gonna completely shift the way that we see ourselves and the way that people see us. And then my hope, like, literally, this is like my hope, and I pray this about this a lot, is that we realize that it's not just indigenous peoples that can, like, allow us to return back to like a more earth-based life, that we have to collaborate like literally collaboration is key for the next phase of humanity in this next paradigm. And if we don't collaborate with each other and we don't respect each other's, like, you know, ways that we speak to each other when we're making an image, or, you know, if the way that we reciprocate with people and make sure that they're taken care of financially as well, you know, that you pay them, you know, like pay people, you know, like if we can realize that we do all these things intentionally now, then when the tragedy happens, then we won't react to the tragedy. And then we'll be equipped and almost like we're learning from each other so much that will not only like overcome the tragedy and almost like be advanced, you know, ahead of it, but also that is gonna set the next generation so much better. If I can heal myself and I can find a place of healing within my own story, then those descendants are gonna be recipients of that one day. Like if I can deal with my own trauma and my own wounds, intergenerational wounds, and then, and I, at the very least attempt to heal them and transform them, then I know that there'll be people in the future that are gonna look back and be like, oh yeah, like my grandpa did this and this and this, or might have this photo book from my grandpa, who he left it behind, you know, and like, I'll probably do some like weird, like AR, VR, so they can see me like in Star Wars or something, so they can actually see me. But then like, you know, like you'll be able to share those stories. Like I'm gonna be an ancestor one day. Like that trips me out, you know, that like one day I won't be here and people are gonna be like, oh, what did you leave behind? What were those messages? What was the healing process like for you, Josue? So that we can learn from that and know where we come from, so that we know where we're going. You know what I mean? That's a long answer.
No, but it was a great one. And I really appreciate your time with us today. And I look forward to watching and learning.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.